Hey, hockey heads, get ready for the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Each game day, answer four questions. Pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, and choose the highest scoring period. Daily winners snag gift cards, while each round's champs pocket cold, hard cash. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess. It's fast, it's fun, and it's all about hockey. Let's go.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Coming in Hot is presented by Betano. The game starts now. Here are your hosts, Brent Wallace, Jason York, and Bobby Ryan.
Good afternoon, everybody. Brent Wallace alongside Jason York. Bobby Ryan is, on assignment in Texas, it looks like, having the time of his life. That guy gets more assignments than anybody I know, York.
He's buying another house. He doesn't have enough houses. I think he's got six right now and needs seven.
Is he getting us one?
I want one in Nashville. I think he might have a couple there, too.
Yes.
Miss that place.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Coming in Hot, presented, as always, by Betano.ca. Go to Betano, download the app. And enjoy in being immersed in a gambling experience. Okay, so we have Jamie Baker on the show, who's one of the original modern-day senators, by the way. It's the first time I've ever gotten a chance to sit down and have a long chat about that inaugural season, plus there's a few other things that tie in there. We'll also talk about the modern-day senators and how Jamie sees them now because he's doing broadcast work with TSN. He's been phenomenal, if you haven't heard him. So, Yorkie, I just want to get to something early before we move on. That's... You still have to get your knee drained at this age, and I'm curious of how that's all played out for you.
Like, what are you curious about?
Well, so one of the things that we don't really take into consideration is what pro athletes go through for 10 years that live with and linger on for the rest of their lives, right? And so, just seeing you talk about talking about your knee being drained all the time is one of those sacrifices you make, right?
Yeah, I call it the cost of doing business. This is the thing when you sign up to be a pro, not that you sign up, when you become a pro athlete, you make lots of money and they make more now than ever. So there's a risk with that. And you do it knowing the risks. And like, I got out easy. I got a bad knee. It's could be a lot worse things going on. But yeah, it's just a thing. And I was fortunate too, Wally. I didn't hurt my knee till I was 37. And it's everybody's. Once you get over 50, pretty soon you'll be wearing compression socks and wristbands and
copper wristbands.
walking around with a cane soon. But you know,
as long as
I can walk the course, play pickup hockey once a week, which I can't do anymore. So I'm one for two. I can golf and walk the course, which, you know what, thankful for that.
I will say, I'm 49, about to hit 50 this season. Oh, I was drying the dishes the other day and my back seized up. I don't do any pro athlete stuff.
You know what I got right now? I this winter I went out and I purchased for myself for Christmas, the old man golf cart. It is the remote control caddy, yes. But it's awesome. I don't care. You get razzed, but I'm like, you know what? I'm walking the course, got my little thing. We call him Winston, but man, it's dangerous. I've ran over two guys already. The other day it crashed in the bunker, and So usually once around, there's a huge mishap where it runs somebody over and chases. The other day, I was on the tee box. I'm like, where's Winston? I go, where's my cart? Can't find it. All of a sudden, I see it going down the fairway, and it's going after a guy that's about to hit his shot. I'm like, shit, press stop. So Winston's got a mind of his own.
All right. Well, mate, he probably also has like a 20-foot thing sticking out of his bag so you can get clubs out of the tree. But that's another story.
Yeah.
So before, let's just get to Jamie. I know he's waiting. So before we do that, as always, we'll get to our sponsor reads. As we like to say, presented by Betano. Go to betano.ca, download the award-winning app, and immerse yourself in online betting. And you can have live betting, bet builder, same game parlays. They also have a thing that'll be better, obviously, next season. But still, as they go into the cup final, is if your team scores 3 goals, you've automatically won. Check that out online. Also, it's elimination day at Betano as the Miami Heat game, as well as the Dallas Stars Vegas Knights game is back on tonight. So keep an eye on that one. As we say, Betano, the game starts now.
Oh, Renfrew Pro Tape, the original hockey tape. Big thanks to our sponsor, Renfrew. As always, it's the best tape in the business. It's the ones the pros use. It's hand terrible, moisture resistant, amongst many other great things. Hey, you go to an NHL locker room, it's always Renfrew tape. You can look them up at renfrewpro.com. As always, it's the one with the green core. Don't forget to tag your friends on Instagram at renfrewpro. Share your stories and what's this? 10 bonus entries. Not sure what that means, but hey, free tape Friday is always good. Renfrew Pro.
It's if you share your story, you get 10 bonus entries. And as always, our good friends at BEI, Heavy Civil General Contractors. BEI, by the way, always looking to hire, but look for them if you have equipment rentals, aggregate topsoil sales, custom crushing and screening, haulage and floating. Plus, if you're looking to have your driveway done, they will do that for you too. BEI, give them a call, 613-432-1120. As we like to say, helping to shape the Ottawa Valley. Now, without further ado, we bring in the first original number 13 of the modern day Ottawa Senators, Jamie Baker, who played over 400 National Hockey League games. Bakes, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Sorry about my poor video feed. Not sure why it is. I guess it's reminiscent of the inaugural Sens team. But the team, bad video. This is what you get, folks.
You know what? You're filling in for Bobby just perfectly. So I like it. Yeah.
Bakes, you still have the Commodore 64 computer or something? What's going on over there?
You know what? I don't know what it is. I don't know if I blame it on you guys because I've had video meetings today and the video's been fine. So I can't quite sure. I put my finger on what's going on. But anyway. It is what it is. It's going to make you dizzy looking at me, so don't look at me.
This is just like when you play.
This is exactly right. Spend an hour with Bakes, you're going to be dizzy. So there you go.
Thank you for joining us. I'm happy to say that I've gotten to know you pretty well over the last couple of years since you've been back in Ottawa. For those who don't know, Jamie's an Ottawa native, a Nepean, if you will, a Nepean Raider, if I'm not mistaken. Jamie played 400 NHL games, played 10 seasons, scored 150 points, 71 goals, 79 assists. I just want to know, because you were selected, you first played for the Quebec Nordiques. When you got chosen to play in Ottawa, or did you get chosen or signed? We have a little technical issue here. We're going different program system, and so things are a little haywire this morning or this afternoon. When you got chosen to come here, were you excited to come back home?
I was. I've been in the Nordiques organization, and I was going up against Claude Lapointe, Marc Fortier, Stephan Morin for one of the last two centerman spots on the team, and Jamie Baker. The name didn't fit necessarily. I didn't have the advantage, put it that way. And so I was an unrestricted free agent. And when Ottawa called, like, it was never a dream growing up. They never had a team here. But what an opportunity to come home and play in front of the hometown in the first year. And I also knew, as it turned out, I was going to get a decent amount of ice time, more ice time than I would maybe elsewhere, as I was still trying to solidify myself as an everyday NHL player. So it was kind of the best of both worlds, at least on paper, coming into the season. Long season.
Bakes, I'm checking out your stats here. That year you played in Ottawa, you still put down 19 goals on an expansion team. So not a bad little piece of work that probably springboarded you to the opportunity with San Jose, right? And then San Jose, we all know what happened there. He scored that big goal. But hey, 19 goals is nothing to, right, shake your head at.
Let's not kid ourselves. I was a very, very average player in the NHL. So I was good enough to make it. I needed to be on an expansion team to establish myself as a player. But I did get power play time in Ottawa. I think, I don't know, maybe half those goals were on the power play. And I wasn't a power play player. The only time I ever played on the power play elsewhere was when the coach was really pissed off at the power play players. You're like, this power play is so fucking bad, we're actually going to put Jamie Baker on it. That's when I got on the power play on other teams.
But, you had 10 of your 19 goals were power play goals. So that 10 year. Of them were,
yeah. So there you go. I was somewhat of a regular on the power play. I wasn't on the first line all year, but I did get some first line time and second line time. So I was on all, I played on all lines. I was a healthy scratch. Like everything happened that year regarding what lines I was on. But anyway, yeah, so it was a good opportunity for me. Put in some numbers. Obviously I didn't have those kind of numbers elsewhere. I was more in a checking role in my other situations.
You finished, by the way, people don't know, second on the team in scoring in that original season. But I'm just curious. Wait a second. How did you become a healthy scratch for being the second on the team in scoring? What did Rick Bowness say to you?
It was to basically send a message, is what I was told. We're going to send a message. It was in Montreal, and I think it was coming down to myself or Bob Kudelski. One of us was going to be a healthy scratch, and they chose me. That was. The message I got was they were sending a message to the team. So, which it was fair, whatever. It at that point, it was, I'd seen everything. Like you can't, first of all, I don't have a ton of recollection of the year. Like you do try and block out years like that. You do know that, yeah. Right? Like you don't make it that far in your career by being on teams that are that bad in the standings, you know? I went and looked at the record just over the weekend, I went and looked at the schedule and everything, and I'm like, oh, painful to watch. It's painful to look at. 10 so, W's? 10 W's out of 82 games.
Well, then let's go back to the first game, because that's obviously the highlight of that whole year. we did have a video pack, but I want to know the feeling inside that room as you're going out to play. And by the way, if people don't know, they play at the Civic Center for that game. As you go out to play your first game, you're facing Patrick Waugh and the, well, at the time, a pretty good Montreal Canadiens hockey team.
I think it was, I can't speak for everyone. My feeling was probably different because I grew up in Ottawa. Like my anticipation leading up to that game was just pure excitement. I was happy for the city. I was happy for the organization. I thought, you know, the fact that we were playing Montreal the first game was really cool. Now, remember, I'd come from Quebec, so I'd had some great games, like fun games against Montreal, right? Like the Montreal-Quebec rivalry, and you play on a Saturday night, you know the entire province is watching. So I'd played Patrick Waugh in Montreal in big games before. I don't think we were daunted by the fact we were playing Montreal. I think it was just the anticipation of the first game. Now, it was long, like from the warm-up to the whole pregame ceremony, it was almost like it was a long lead up to puck drop that night. I do remember that. Like we were waiting in our room a long time. We're like, let's get this game going. It's almost like, it was like, you know, what football players say, it's the halftime show is at the Super Bowl, something like that. This ball won't be the Super Bowl, but it was a big night. It was the Super Bowl for the city of Ottawa, you know, the coronation of the team coming back. So I think there were jitters. Nobody knew what to expect from the team. But, you know, lots of guys had played in the NHL, had already played Montreal. I don't think there was, like, nobody was intimidated by the fact we were playing Montreal.
Really? Okay. So.
Oh, we got some video. We got some video here.
So it's even worse than Jamie's camera because it's from 1992. Is the the pillar that wouldn't go back up. Did you laugh at that?
We didn't know what was going on. We were inside the room wondering what is taking so long. Like, this show is taking a really long time. So yeah, like we were like, let's get the puck drop. So we didn't know. I think they might have told us. Like, this is like, that's like a small detail. I don't remember exactly all the details. They probably came in and said there's a bit of a malfunction to the equipment and there's going to be another delay. There was nothing we could do about it. But yeah, we waited a long time. I do know that.
And Bakes, I found the Civic Center. I played a game in there as a member of the Red Wings. It was such an odd building to play in. It was the NHL, but it kind of felt like not really the NHL because it's just the square corners, the low drop of the ceiling on the one side. Like, it must have been weird for you playing in that building and when you came home, right? Because it was a 67s building, and all of a sudden, boom, the Sens are playing there.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like what the Arizona Coyotes are going through right now, per se. Right? You're playing in you get used to wherever your home rink is, you get used to it. And we didn't practice there very often, so we were practicing in Kanata. But you get used to it, but it is weird with it's hanging low on the one side. It is more of a junior rink. I'd like to say we had home ice advantage. We didn't, obviously. We didn't win a lot of games at home. I know we won most of our games at home. I think nine games at home. We were better at home on the road. I will say that the dimensions of the arena had something to do with that, I guess. I don't think it was last change.
The old bank pass off the end boards that comes right out in the slot if you just hit it perfectly in that rink.
That's a cross corner dump. Exactly. You can't do it. Exactly.
The one thing I find interesting still today is the teams exit the Zamboni tunnel together and the linesman has to stay on and separate the two as they skate by or walk by.
No, like, you guys had to never walk. No brawls ever happened. But it was weird because you had to wait, you know, like sometimes at the end of the period and stuff like that. So one team exits the other one. And yeah, it was weird. It was also weird. Like it's weird during warm up too. Right. So because the other team had to come down and go through our, like they have to wait. You're shooting on the net. Like, I'm not saying you want to non-intentionally miss the net as someone's trying to go off the ice. But it could happen by if it's somebody you don't like on the other team. Yeah. You never know, right?
Those you never know. Pucks,
you never know what happens. It makes it. I had the same thing when I played for the Chicago Wolves. That was at the end of my career. Same thing. Everybody exited from the same end. And there were a couple of brawls there in the minors there. So nothing in Ottawa that I remember of.
How fired up was Rick Bowness on that game? Throughout the game. Do you remember?
No.
Okay. Like that's watched. Like he's at the very end. If you see the video, like he's pointing into the stands or pointing at something. Like he's totally jacked into this game because, I mean, you guys just won your first game.
Yeah. So the things that stick out for me from that game were more the lead up to it. Yeah. I just like I remember being nervous and having trouble having my typical afternoon nap. Like, you know, there was like, I was really excited and I was also nervous. Another thing that really sticks out was after the game, Peter Sidorkiewicz and I were talking and we were kind of laughing. There's Bones. So yeah, he was animated. He was, you know, a young coach trying to make a mark in the NHL. So it was a big deal for all of us to get the win. But there were some experts that predicted we might only win 8 games that year, which would be one win out of every 10 games. And after the game, Peter Sidorkiewicz and I were talking, and we were laughing. We had a good little chuckle about it. We're like, oh, those experts, like, as if they know, like, we're one. So I guess we don't need to win for the next 9 games. Well, the joke was a little bit on us because we went on a 17 game winless streak after that. And so we got to about the 10th game mark and then, you know, Sidorkiewicz and I, we were like, okay, we're never saying that again. Like we're never joking about how crappy this team is or what experts are saying. So yeah, I do remember that conversation with Sidorkiewicz.
So as that season's going along and you're Well, especially on the road, and you can't win. It's not until I think your 38th game of the season on the road you finally get your only road win that year in Long Island. Is it hard? Because you guys are professional athletes. You don't want to be embarrassed, all that stuff. What is it like mentally going through that?
Is that really a question?
Yes.
Yorkie, is it hard losing 37 games?
It's all good. It's all good.
No, fuck, that's great. It's fine. Guys are just having a ball with it.
Yeah, might end my career or something like that.
But are there fights in the lock? Like, is it tense? Is it? I just want to know what the mood is like, because at some point you got to try and, as they say, park every game and go to the next one.
You try and compartmentalize it. Nobody was prepared for, I mean, we knew we weren't going to make the playoffs, but we didn't think it was going to be that bad. You still try and put on a good happy face or a good light, but there was frustration throughout the course of the year, and it could be different guys at different times. It wears you down. The losing wears you down. And it was embarrassing. Like, nobody wants to get embarrassed. I can't even imagine what it'd be like in today's day and age with all the social media and everything. You'd just be getting mocked every day on social media, on the highlights and everything. Now, the one thing, there were no expectations in Ottawa. People were just happy to have the NHL back. Yeah. So, when the Pittsburgh Penguins came in, nobody cared that we lost to Pittsburgh. They were just happy to see Mario Lemieux playing in Ottawa. Same thing when LA was in, you name it, across the board. When Quebec was there, you got to see Sakic and Sundin and Owen Nolan. So you were always seeing these superstar players from other teams. So we had a pass from the fan base and from the media base. But from us, you're looking at the standings every day. It was hard. I took it really hard as the year went on. Yeah. It was my first year of marriage. I was living in Ottawa. In the second half of the year, I didn't talk to family and friends as much. I had really low key. I found it kind of embarrassing, how bad we were, in the standings. I mean, we were still working hard and everything, but it wore on you over the course of the year. And the losing thing, it was nip and tuck that we were not going to win a game on the road. So when we finally won, which was Laurie Boschman scoring a hat trick in overtime, and you've probably heard the story before where we all come in, we're all around him, and he's like, we're going to Disneyland. We kind of were making fun of the situation. But it wasn't that funny. Over the course of the season, it was frustrating on the road.
Do you know what I found, Bikes? Because I remember I was playing in Anaheim, and then I had got traded to Ottawa the next year. And Ottawa, I think, had just finished year two, and they were really bad. And there was an article that came
out. You were here third year? That was when you came?
I came the year the team moved into the Corral Center.
Okay.
96. And I was scared to death coming to the Ottawa Senators because you're a young player and a similar. I'm established, but not really. And what I'd always think about is you're on a losing team, and you continue to lose. Well, your NHL career could be over because they'll just bring somebody else in. That's what happens with new teams. It's just so much changeover until they get the recipe right. So, Bakes, I don't know about you. When I was in Anaheim, same thing. I was in year two, and you're confident, but you're always looking over your shoulder because you know there's someone else coming, and you keep losing. There's a good chance you're going to be replaced.
I don't have the exact stat, so I could be wrong. So to any of my ex-teammates, not that they're watching or listening, but I think 2 years later, there was only four guys from that team still in the league.
Crazy.
Which is to your point. Yeah, it wasn't a lot of guys. I do know that. Now, some of them were older guys that retired. Brad Marsh ended up retiring, Laurie Boschman, Doug Smale. So there were some older guys like that. And then there were some guys that had been pretty much, they'd spent most of their career in the minor leagues, played in Ottawa, maybe a little bit, the first 2 years, and then they went back to the minor leagues. But there weren't many guys. 3 years later, it wasn't the majority of the team were still in the NHL, to Yorkie's point.
Yeah.
So while we were there, it was this dichotomy of like, I'm getting an opportunity.
Yeah.
I'm getting more ice time, but I'm on such a bad team that it doesn't, like, is it really helping my career? And you don't know that, you know? So anyway, that's what you're dealing with when you're on a team that's losing as much as it did.
Exactly.
It's like being on a Stanley Cup. If you're a depth player on a Stanley Cup, you're a wanted player. Like, come trade deadline, people want guys that have won Stanley Cups. It's so this is the opposite.
When you win, you're labeled a winner. When you lose, you're labeled a loser.
Exactly. Just the way it goes. It is what it is.
So how come you didn't sign back with Ottawa? Was that your choice or was that theirs? Why did you move to San Jose the next year?
That was like, I'll call it mutual. Is the best way to put it. So it was a tough year coming down the stretch, and I had like some potential opportunities to come back, and then I was also offered the opportunity if you know to test the market, and I ended up testing the market, and that's okay. Where I ended up. The simple story is it was kind of a mutual parting of the ways.
So of the four teams you played for, and that's San Jose, Toronto, Quebec, and Ottawa, where does that one season with Ottawa, as you being a hometown guy, where's that rank for you despite the record?
That's a good question. It was the hardest year. That was the hardest year. It was the hardest year. As much, it was just, Toronto was tough too. Just the media scrutiny there, and you know, my second year there, it was near the end of my career, and I knew it. Like I knew I was hanging on. I took a slap shot in the head, and like it was just brutal. So that was hard too, I guess. Like, I guess wherever you finish, and like you're not wanted in the league anymore per se, you're not good enough. Like the opportunity cost has come to an end. I guess that might be the hardest. But that year in Ottawa, like personally, like the course of the year, I took it personally, all the losses. I think maybe because I was from Ottawa too. Like, I just wanted the team to be better, you know, and I'm like a competitive guy. So I definitely found that. Like Quebec, I was just trying to make the NHL. So it was just whatever it takes. San Jose, we had kind of some special teams there. Like, you know, I know we didn't go on to win the cup, but it was kind of cool. We were overachieving, and we had that fan base. We're coming out of the shark head. Like, it was cool. It was the first team in San Jose. So those were really good memories. Ottawa though, like I'll always remember, like that first game is still one of my top five hockey memories in my life. Yeah. is the opening night here in Ottawa. Like I'll remember that game the rest of my life.
Does Neil Brady deserve a statue?
Not a statue.
You know what I found interesting, which I didn't know?
He doesn't deserve a statue.
he only scored 7 goals that year.
Yeah.
But
what do you get when you get that first goal for a franchise that's coming back, that's already won 9 Stanley Cups? What do you deserve now that you look back on it? Do you think he deserves a statue?
I don't know you, Bakes, but they're handing out statues like way too easily these days. For me, if you're a statue guy, your Gretz or your Lemieux,
Howell.
So you don't agree with the Dustin Brown?
Well, but then again, I'm not a guy that cares. Like, I'm not a man. Hey, you shouldn't have given him that statue. But I'm like, hey, do I agree? No. Like, I think you have to be engraved in a statue. Like I said, you gotta be like iconic. That's just me. Do I care? No. But that's just how I feel.
Right. It's a fair statement.
I'm not getting back in on it. Debate.
Yeah, what? No. The statue debate?
No.
It's a statue, for God's sake. It's never leaving.
It's fine. If they want to build a statue in their city to honor somebody, go right ahead.
I agree.
We live in a city where we build statues for everybody downtown. And then, anyway, moving on.
And so that's kind of how I feel. Even like, you know, like some people, when Chris Neal, when they raised his number to the rafters, there were people on this is on Twitter. Now, remember where we're let's remember the source, right?
The voice of reason, and Twitter.
And probably people that aren't Sens fans. But the argument is, like, you don't know what he meant to this organization or this city. So don't just look at his numbers. Don't look at a guy that was considered an enforcer. And he, like, did he deserve that? 100%. So that's how I look at, you know, who am I to say what statue deserving in Los Angeles for an organization that, you know, over the, you know, you look at the length of that, where that team's been. I mean, they had some good years with Gretzky. They went to the Stanley Cup, but they were not a good team for a lot of years. They had a lot of lean years. Yeah. And then Dustin Brown's there, and he's like a heart and soul guy. And he's the captain when they win a couple of Stanley Cups. Like, he's the captain. He's the, so like, who am I to say that that's, you know, like even Gretzky didn't win a, like Gretzky's Gretzky. You give him a statue, obviously. Yeah. But he didn't win a Stanley Cup there. But Dustin Brown did while he was the captain. So, and, you know, I wasn't a big Dustin Brown fan, like, on the ice, because I was working for the Sharks. And obviously, that's their rival team. And he was a physical player. There was some knee-to-knee hits and stuff like that. But you could never take away the value that he was to that team. Like, I got to see the value up close in playoff series. And he was a hard guy to play against.
Yorkie. This, and by the way, this wasn't ever in the Nerd Report. If they were to build a statue of Daniel Alfredsson, would you say no?
A statue? I don't know. I have to think about that one. Like, Alfie's got his number retired. You know, I'm not sure on that one yet. Because to me, I think you do, like, for a statue. I think you do have to have a Stanley Cup, I think, in my statue resume. I think that's
well,
important.
Well, then there should be two Dustin Browns.
I don't know. You know what? It's tough question. You caught me off guard there.
That's because I want you to have to talk to him at the golf course this summer and him go, hey, yeah. You don't
think I need a statue. I was listening to the show and you said I don't deserve a statue.
I'm sending this clip right now. It's exactly. Okay.
That's Wally. You're stirring the pot. You know what to do. You're good at it. If you're going to be good at it, do it.
I feel strongly on statues, though. Like, statues for me are a big deal.
Yep.
All right. We'll move on. I got more because I need tons of stuff to talk with Jamie. And that is, I'm going to tie in 1994 and 2023 together in this one question. In 94, you as the San Jose Sharks barely make it into the playoffs. You're the last team to go in, as you know. You knock off the number one Western Conference team, and that's the Detroit Red Wings, on a Game 7 winning goal by none other than Jamie Baker, who, by the way, opened the scoring of that series.
I didn't.
You didn't.
So this is where the hockey gods, there's a hockey god story to this. The puck actually deflected off my stick a little bit, but they gave the credit to the goal to Sean Cronin.
The first goal of the
playoff series. It would have been the first goal in Sharks playoff history. I was in front of the net. There's no way, even today, it would be like, you just have to trust the player that he tipped it. It wasn't this wild redirection. But you know, like, Yorkie, you've been in front of the net where, as a defenseman, it's probably just nipped your stick and gone in the net, but you felt it, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, I knew it hit my stick, but I'm like, I'm not going to go to the refs and go, like, that was my – I didn't give a shit. I'm like, we scored a goal. We're up 1-0. Good for us. And never said anything. So, was on a night – for me, I got a plus. We're up 1-0. That was good enough. So that's where, if nothing else, that's where the hockey gods paid me back in Game 7 with kind of a fluky game-winning goal in Game 7. But so I actually didn't. Sean Cronin scored the first goal in the Sharks playoff history.
I apologize. I just read it, but I didn't actually fact-check it. So
Bakes, were you trying to remember? Because I always try to think when the goal train came about. You know what, after guys scored and they go, was that pre-goal train or post-goal train?
What are you talking about?
You know, when guys score, everyone goes down the bench.
Like that. No, yeah.
It used to be just the five guys on the ice celebrating.
Yeah.
Not that I care. So.
Never did that. No, that's
no goal train.
We'll have to look into that.
I don't know when that came about.
So my reason I want to ask that question is, how big was that upset? Some people call it one of the biggest, if not the biggest, in NHL history, to today's NHL with the Florida Panthers knocking off the Boston Bruins. What's bigger?
It's, I mean, they're both really close, right? Nobody expected us to beat Detroit. They were they were one of the favorites to win the Stanley Cup, loaded with like Hall of Famers. What nobody knew about us, we started the year 0-8-1. And so we were playing like not playoff hockey, but like desperate hockey from game 10 on, just to try and get ourselves back into the standings. Back then we played 84 games. The last 42 games, I think we had like the ninth best record in the league. So it was a little, people didn't, like, you had to look at the body of work, the first half of the year to the second half. We were playing some pretty good hockey, but nobody knew, because you just say, well, they're in 10th place, they're in 9th place. Oh, they sneak into 8th place. So we had that belief. I would give the nod to Florida just because Boston's regular season was the greatest regular season of all time. Like, did anybody really believe that Florida was going to beat Boston 4 games? Like, I didn't. No. Nobody did. No. So I would say nobody thought we were going to win either. So I think they're very equivalent, but I give the nod just because of the regular season that Boston had. If Boston didn't, if they didn't break the records but won the President's Trophy, then I would give San Jose the nod, the 94 San Jose team the nod. But because they did, I would say Florida this year.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Where does that goal rank?
Yeah, that's a big one.
For you, where does that goal rank?
Well, the biggest goal I ever scored. Part of Sharks history. Pretty cool. You know, I don't think it's the biggest goal in Sharks history anymore. Like, I think I would give that to, you know, Ray Whitney scored in double overtime the next year. I would give it to maybe Barkley Goodrow when the Sharks beat Vegas in game 7, that incredible comeback, you know, when they scored 4 power play goals. That was the wildest game I've ever been to, by the way. You know, I was broadcasting down behind Vegas's net, kind of in the wheelchair section there. We had a 3-man crew, TV crew, and Ray Ferraro, because it was a national game, he was in between the benches. So I was down behind the net, so I saw all the action there, and then interviewed Barkley Goodrow after, which was, that would probably be the greatest goal in Sharks history. But yeah, it's like part of Sharks, you know, lore, being, you know, part of a team that had still the biggest turnaround in NHL history, which the Devils almost did this year, but I think it was 56 points. And then the first series win, and to have that, you know, game winning goal in game 7. It got me a 16-year broadcasting career. That's what that goal did.
Exactly. Did you get free drinks?
There's no broadcasting career without that goal.
Can you drink whenever you go to San Jose for free?
No, they don't give it. No.
Bakes.
Listen, Dwight Clark, now he could go drink anyway. That's the catch.
Bakes, I'll tell you.
Anderson, then you've got, you know, give me somebody great from the, you know, Barry Bonds. He can drink wherever he wants, right? Steph Curry, he drinks wherever he wants. San Jose Sharks, we're low on the totem pole out there compared to the other major league sports. Like, there's a great following. Hockey's really popular there, but it still doesn't have, like, the mainstream appeal that those other sports do. Like, those guys are true legends.
Bakes, I'll tell you a funny story about your winner. I was in the minors at the time playing for Detroit. So you know what it's like when you're down at the minors.
You're cheering for the other team. So you were happy.
Well,
you're like, damn right, Bakes.
We're in a bar. I think it's in Springfield, New York. Because this is 1994.
Were you guys still playing in the playoffs?
We were still playing. We had a really good team. And Detroit, I still think that was a monumental upset. I think you're underselling it, because that Detroit team was loaded to the tits. It was so deep, and their payroll was ridiculous. So we're in a bar, I think it's Springfield, New York, the Adirondack Red Wings, and Dougie McLean is our GM, and he's down there like just watching the game, gritting his teeth, because hey, there's jobs on the line here. And you guys win, and we start cheering all the players because it's the only chance you're going to have to make Detroit if they lose and they make changes. McLean, what the fuck are you guys yelling at? Cheering about? Like, oh, we're all being quiet. But
that's awesome.
Oh man,
which ended up costing, you know, Brian Murray.
Well, right,
God bless his soul. Like, it cost him his job. Yeah, you know?
And Doug, because they were a package, right?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Doug and Brian were a package, but I'll never forget, because we couldn't believe it, because we're like, all right, Detroit's going to win the Stanley Cup. We're going to be stuck with the minors forever. So
they were so good.
Oh my
Sergei God. Fedorov was so good that year. I think that's the year he won the MVP. That this is like, if somebody did this in today's game, in today's like YouTube era, it would be interesting to see the response on social media. I came up because I knew I was going to be playing against their top lines. So I'm going to be playing against Fedorov. And if he gets ahead of steam, kind of like Pavel Bure back in the day, like there was nothing you can do.
You're done.
It's like McDavid, you're done. So like, if you're trying to play him a one-on-one in the neutral zone, he's got you. He's like he just goes one way, then you're going the other. So what I did, I would come in and I practiced it. So I did it two or three times in the series. Once or twice, I know one for sure led to Ray Whitney getting a breakaway. He might have got two breakaways from this. So Fedorov's coming. He gets to his own blue line. He's got all kinds of speed. I went and slid, like as if you're blocking a shot, at his stick. So I'd like 6 feet. He didn't get, I'm like, I'm not playing the body. I can't stop him. So I'm just going to go slide. It's like, just slide right into there's nothing he could do. Stop the puck. I'm on my knees and I just throw the puck out in front into the middle of the ice ahead of me. Mm. And then off we go. Like, it was like a quick transition. We got one or two breakaways because of doing it. Now, I've never seen really anyone do it, but there was like some creative things that were getting done to try and slow that team down, because they were really good.
Fedorov to me, he might be, when he wanted to be, I thought he was the best player in the game. Like, when he wanted to be, he could do everything. Remember, he went back and played D for a while for Scotty Bowman. Put him on defense.
It was the next year, just to keep him motivated. Can you imagine?
That'd be
like putting you center.
Listen, he came over the first year. Fedorov came over. Nobody knew who this guy was. He shows up at training camp. I'm trying to make the team. This guy's legs are like tree trunks. Had to be on the Russian gas for sure. Like, he was doing 30 pull-ups. Like he was like Dragel, but cut, like smaller. So first drill at training camp, because you're put into two groups, there's 12 players on the ice because we're not playing that night. 6D and 6 forwards. I get paired up to do nonstop one-on-ones versus Sergei Fedorov, full ice. Needless to say, I was sent to the minors the next day.
How are those crossovers working out for you? Fucking tripping over your feet.
Thanks. Starting
a couple of ankle breakers, eh?
The old start backwards when the forward starts forwards, full ice against Fedorov. Like, come on, I'm not winning.
No chance. Yeah, he was He was so good, so shifty. That's the thing. Like the game, it's interesting. Like people ask you, not often, but sometimes how the game has changed. And the overall speed of the game is better today because the depth players, like the guys on the third and fourth lines and the fourth, fifth, and sixth defensemen are all better skaters.
Yeah.
But like the top, top players, I don't think anyone's ever been faster with the puck than Connor McDavid.
No.
But like Fedorov was pretty close. And I got to tell you, Pavel Bure, he was the Russian rocket. Timo Solani, like those guys in today's game, they would be McGillney, like these guys would have been, they'd be some of the fastest guys out there. They'd be like amazing players in today's game. So you still have those superstars that were just, but they were a completely another level, especially compared to the depth players back in the day.
Well, not to mention those guys had to put up with a ton of slashing on their forearms, cross checks to the back, yeah, can openers, like just the nonsense they had to put up with. Like,
yes.
It's crazy. Like you look at guys from played in that era, and Wally, you can always tell a guy that's played from that era because his forearms are filled with all these scars from slash marks. Yes. Like you probably got a ton on your forearm, Biggs. There are these red marks that you got. Like if you played over 5 years in the NHL, your forearm is littered with slash marks.
You just are way overestimating the amount of time I had the puck on my stick.
you were given the slashes. Now,
but there's a lot of guys that have marks on their hand because of what I did. Absolutely. No, but I did. Because we used to go after each other there. We used to try and slash each other there. I was like one of the things. And then try and cross-check guys, you know, in the rib cage right below the shoulder pads and above the pants. Like it was automatic, right? Smash each other's heads into the glass, like all the things that are, it's good that, you know, that a bunch of them aren't in the game today, but at the same time, it was a much different, like it was hard to get to the front of the net back.
Oh my God.
Just to get there was hard. So yeah, different game, different types of players.
You guys remember Sean. So Sean McEachran played with Jaromir Jagr in Pittsburgh. And we were playing Pittsburgh and McEachran comes before the game, he's like, guys, Jagr hates it when you slash his hands. Well, who doesn't? So the entire game, all we did was slash his hands. The entire game. Like, imagine that. Like, how would that go over today? And there's Jagr's like, he was dissing. Because you got three good slashes before the ref was putting his arm up.
I can attest to the fact that some of the best players in the league were also some of the dirtiest. Mary Lemieux, Steve Yzerman. Oh. These are guys that would, you know, you'd get corkscrew them, hold them, Messier, like they, you know, I've been cross-checked, speared, butt-ended in the face, different times, like, and then the refs would let it go because those guys, people came to watch them play. They didn't come to watch me, you know, I'm part of the entertainment package, but I'm not the entertainment package. Those guys were the entertainment package and they had to fend for themselves back in the day. And they did because there was, you know, and again, it's, you know, I know Merrill Lemieux, he used to always wanted the league to enforce it better so these top players could really show their stuff, which they do nowadays. It's like that's where you see a different product out there.
Yeah. I always wish Mike Bossy would have been able to play longer if he didn't have the back issues from all the cross-checking right? There's a couple of people in the chat have questions for you, Jamie, so I'm just going to throw them out, the randoms. Any stories or what was it like to play with Mike Peluso?
It was good. He had a lot of emotion. I'll tell you, like, he battled for everybody. He dropped the gloves more than anyone, right? So he came in, he was a big personality. He and I butted heads a couple of times during the year. Like, we got into, like, he actually once, we had was in Ottawa, and he's like, let's go fucking down the hallway and fight. No, you're going to kill me. I'm not going to do that. I go, I'm not an idiot. You know what I mean? Like, why would I go do that? I'm not going to go fight you. But we were like, whatever it was, I don't know what we were mad at, but those were like moments of frustration that happened over the course of the year. Right? Like guys would like, it was tough, all the losing. So like I do, but he stuck up for all the guys over the course of the year. He fought a lot. I don't know what his penalty minutes were. They were probably over 300. So he was a, you know what he was? He was a great teammate. That's what Mike Peluso was. And like I said, emotional guy, wore his emotions on his sleeves, let you know where he stood. But I'll tell you, when the going was getting rough out there, and he was the first guy to have your back. And happy that he eventually went on and won a Stanley Cup, because like a team first guy through and through, he deserved it.
318 penalty minutes. The next closest teammate had 145, which was Darcy Loewen. I also wanted to point out, Jamie, in that series with Sergei Fedorov, in seven games, Sergei Fedorov had one goal. That's it. 8 points and was a minus one. So you did your job extremely well.
There you go. Good.
I just wanted to pump your tires. Another question we have. Yes. If you needed any more validation, I suppose. Right. Do you think Doug Wilson would be a good hockey ops guy for the Ottawa Senators?
I thought you were going to ask me if he'd be a good hockey ops guy for the Toronto Maple Leafs, because his name's been brought up. Here's the thing about Doug. The experience that he has, the success that he has had, he would benefit probably any organization. What he built in San Jose, the only thing he didn't do is win a Stanley Cup. Like, we're talking prolonged success. And they underachieved a lot of times in the playoffs because the expectations were so high. Like, people were picking them to win the Stanley Cup. So anything less than that was, well, you didn't reach the, you know, the level.
They should have won, Jamie. They should have won.
Yes, they should have won. They should have won. I watched it. I watched it all.
They were the most frustrating team to me. They were like the Ottawa Senators of the early late 90s, early 2000s, just loaded with talent and could never get it done.
And at all different stages of the playoffs. Like, it wasn't like the Leafs are now. Like, it wasn't like they couldn't get out of the first round.
Right.
Some year, like, it was, you know, they the one year that they were President's Trophy, they lost in the first round to Anaheim, you know, in six games. Other years, it was the conference finals. Then, you know, they finally punched their ticket to the Stanley Cup. They should have won a Stanley Cup. They were so, so good. He constructed that team so well. He would make some of the moves that he made. Obviously, every GM, if you're going to be in the league a long time, you're going to make some mistakes.
Yep.
But, you know, he would make some aggressive moves at the trade deadline. He signed guys. He got hometown discounts from, like, a guy like Thornton, which – it's kind of the character of Thornton, but it still allows you to spend a little bit more elsewhere. He knew that market really well. So yeah, he's somebody just, I totally respect for the work he did. And you know what he did? He also created a really good culture.
Yeah.
Like he, the scouts loved it. Like he, if you look at the people that worked with him for a long period of time, there's a lot of guys. And It was like he believed in this family dynamic type of workplace where, like, we want to hear your opinion and everything. Everybody respects each other. And that's how he treated everybody. And it was a good place to work.
Final question. I can't see. From Small Time Gamer. Who's your favorite line mate to play with?
My favorite line mate all time?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a loaded question because, like, my first game, I was right wing and Joe Sakic was center. Like, I could say Joe Sakic, even though I only played a couple of games with him. You know who probably would be my favorite? Who's my? Do you want to know who it is? Maybe one of them? It'd be Jeff Rogers.
Ooh.
Jeff Rogers. I just, he was, first of all, he was so tough and I played a pest role. It allowed me to really play that role because he had my back. Like we'd come off the ice sometimes and I'm like, Audrey, you got to do me a favor. They're fucking pissed off. I might get jumped from behind. He's like, what'd you do? And I'm like, well, I might have speared him in the balls or something. You know what I mean? Like, I might, or did something. I slashed him right across the wrist and I got the wrist. So, like, it was always like, what'd you do? But the other thing is, he was such an honest player. Like, he was so tough. He was north-south. Like, I knew he would go to the net. And, like, I could just rely on him. So I had all kinds, like, I loved playing with Gaétan Duchesne, Ray Whitney. Bob Airey would be one of my favorites. Bob Airey and I had great chemistry. But just because Audgie was so predictable, more than anyone, Bob Airey would be next on my list. He'd be next. So
good broadcasters.
As a centerman, I loved having a winger, especially in a third line role, that I knew exactly what they were going to do. If their tendency was to drive the net, then I always knew that they'd be. So, like, if I had an opportunity to shoot, I know that they're there, either for a screen, tip, or rebound type of thing. And I knew how hard they'd forecheck. So it shrunk the ice for me. I didn't have to do the heavy lifting in the offensive zone. I could stay high in the mid-high slot in the offensive zone. And I did the heavy work down low in the defensive zone. So it was like we worked very well that way.
I told you we'd keep you for 30, 40 minutes. Do you need to go?
I got a few more minutes.
Okay, so good. Because
I got 5-10 minutes.
Yorkie's got a Leaf question for you.
Oh, we were going to get into the Leaf stuff right now?
Well, I want to ask about ownership, but I wanted to tie up his career before I ask about Seth's current ownership.
This one just, again, I don't care, but it always gets me. And you played in Toronto. So remember in Montreal, you had the big three, right? Robinson, Lapointe, Serge Savard. Yeah. They didn't become the big three until they won something, right? Like, don't you have to, like, to get that kind of name? Don't you have to, like... So I always think of Toronto, I'm like, the big four. Well, you can't really call them the big four. So I guess they've changed it to the core four. But it's just, to me, it's just, it's a Toronto thing. It's like, just relax.
Is it based on skill or contract?
Well,
it's big four contracts that inhibit other moves that you can make.
Yeah.
To some degree.
To me, if you're going to call somebody the big four, don't you have to win first?
I think Jamie's right. I think it's based on contracts.
Yeah. Well, if it's based on contracts, that's one thing. That's one thing. But to me, it's like, just easy with the big nicknames here. And like, you got to earn those things.
I have a nickname for it.
What do you
got? The Frozen Four. You're not getting anything done.
Something's got it. Something's got to happen.
You're going to have the NCAA will be all over you.
All right, Bake, something has to happen there, right? You're going to have to trade one of those guys, aren't you? Like, something's got to happen.
I mean, I don't know which one you trade. I know they all like playing for each other, but it shouldn't be up to them. I think Florida is a perfect case. And listen, let's be honest. Like, Tkachuk kind of fell on their doorstep a little bit, right? Like, he wanted to leave Calgary.
Yeah.
And Florida was one of the destinations he chose, you know, like, so but they still had to make the trade and they had to get rid of two guys. Like, I don't think they wanted to get, you know, I don't think they wanted to trade Mackenzie Weegar. You know, I think if they could have been Huberdeau just for Tkachuk, obviously good for Calgary to get both. But, you know, from Florida standpoint, I don't think they wanted to trade away Mackenzie Weegar. So, but you look what, like, Billy Zito has done. And he was like, and to change the coaches. He's like, this isn't acceptable. Like, we're good, but we're not there. And it's almost like Toronto hasn't faced that yet. It's like, for whatever reason, they still think, and you know what? Maybe there's something we're missing that we don't know behind the scenes that they're gonna punch through at some point and go on a deep run. Like Washington, look at Washington. They underachieved for years in the playoffs until they won the Stanley Cup, and we don't talk about them anymore.
So they only changed coaches.
Yeah. So I think the guy, I think it's Marner. I think he's the guy. Cause I think you can get a good haul coming back. I don't think you're going to trade Tavares. I just don't see teams picking him up. Austin Matthews. I mean, he's where he is contractually. I don't know. And I think it might be good for Marner too. I think the pressure of playing, being from Toronto, playing there, I think it takes a toll. I you can see it. You can see it in his interviews, and you know, you can even see it like in, and he had, like, you kind of root for guys like that, that, you know, get, have been beaten down by the media so much. So he's the guy, I think, if they traded one of them, that I think could benefit, I think it could benefit both parties. That's what I think.
Okay, man, I just saw it with those. I actually like the moves Dubas made this year. They brought in Ryan O'Reilly. They brought in a Cherry. They had some depth. They brought in Jake McCabe. I'm like, I thought they were going to have a little bit of a run this year. So I was a little surprised. So for me, I'm with you, Bakes. I think, yeah, you probably get a lot for Marner. But then again, there's this whole dilemma. Is Austin Matthews going to stay? And who knows? It's going to be interesting, to say the least. Whoever goes in there and runs Toronto has a lot of work to do.
Yeah, they do.
I don't want to talk about the Leafs.
Yeah, I know.
So, Jamie, the last question. You know what? Let me get through these tweets.
It always worries me when someone says the last question and then they scratch their face.
He always does this. He's giving you 10
more. I'm notorious
for
this. Yeah, I apologize. Okay, so here on the weekend, Nico Sparks, who's one of the bidding groups, got into it on Twitter, responding to a fan about, you know, saying, how would you know? Wait, you don't. Your judgment is based on what you read. Unfortunately, those aren't facts. Obviously, we're still here for a reason, and it's not spitting quarters line up with the other haters because we're not going anywhere. And then he took a lot of heat for that, to which somebody, and then he had to apologize at some point here. Everyone's entitled to their opinion, regardless of how inaccurate they are. I love Ottawa and the team and deeply believe everything we stand for, inclusiveness and the Stanley Cup. I apologize for responding for the personal attacks leveled against me. Here's my issue with this, and Jamie, as a broadcaster, I'm going to bring you in, is we haven't, I've said this all along and I'm on record. You don't hear from the other groups. You never hear from the Kimmels, the Andlauers, and the Apostopoulos, if I said that correctly. So you shouldn't be hearing from Nico Sparks. I wish he hadn't done this, because not before has he gone online to engage with Sens fans. And now suddenly he wants to do this, and it paints it in a negative picture. What are your thoughts on the way this has all been playing out?
I think each group has a strategy, different strategies. You know, some are going to be quieter, what they're going to do. Others are going to be like, this is the value that we're going to bring. And I think the Nico Sparks group, they saw the momentum that Ryan Reynolds created. They just saw that, and they're piggybacking that kind of style, that we're going to come in and you're going to see us in the media and we're going to build the brand and we're going to do all this. Like, so here's, if you look at just when you guys put the tweet up of him apologizing, like, these guys don't think that this might not be calculated. These are they're smart people. Like,
I disagree.
No, so, and that's fair, but to come out, can we put that back up? Can we put that response back up, his apology? Everyone is entitled to their opinions, regardless of how inaccurate they are. That's what he's saying. I love Ottawa, the team, and deeply believe everything we stand. So this is the message that he wanted to get out, in my opinion.
I think this is a terrible PR. Like, whoever's doing PR is completely lost this group. That's what I think.
Where were they anyway, though? Where are they, even from a financial standpoint? So maybe they're just grasping for straws at this point. Or I don't think they're the lead horse anyway. So they're trying, what do you do when you're going to try and do anything you can to get back into the race?
Gary doesn't want to hear from you in the public. I can just ask Jim Balsillie, and we can go back to that each and every time. If you don't shut up, they don't want to entertain you. And Ryan Reynolds gets a bit of a pass only because he's from Ottawa. I think that's a big part. And he's always had a factor with Ottawa.
I mean, and because of the show, Welcome to Wrexham.
Absolutely.
Like, but I think he's from Ottawa, and he's got this, he's taken this fifth division soccer team and made them an international brand. Yep. It would be like, the story is like, oh my gosh, this would be perfect for the Senators, where the Nico Sparks group, they don't have something like, we're saying, well, this is something distinctive that we could ultimately do that's going to really bolster not just the organization, but the entire city. That's not there yet. So I think they're, yeah, I think they're, I think, so here's what I think. I think they're grasping at straws, but I do think it was strategic. I think it was a strategic move.
I think everyone's at the point where we thought this was going to be resolved probably a month or two ago. And I just think you're seeing frustrations coming out all around. So I do agree with your point while you made earlier, like the old saying in the movies, right? Silence is golden. I do think the NHL does prefer that. But I don't think Sparks came out and said anything that's really going to impact it. But I just think there's a lot of frustrations going around everywhere, because especially here in the city, like people want, they want some clarity. And, as we know, there's lots of decisions that need to be made, important ones as far as roster construction this summer for the Senators. Some big decisions to be made. So,
a lot of decisions, absolutely.
All right, Jamie, I'm going to let you go. Last question is, what's your favorite cheat snack when you're watching a movie?
Ooh.
Well, that's a loaded question. Because I'm a fucking cheater when it comes to that shit. Right now,
yeah,
it's ice cream. But like, throw a nice bowl of popcorn and I'm equally happy. But right now I'm going through a little bit of an ice cream phase. I got a dad's bot. It's embarrassing. It's bad. I need to,
Bakes, are you out in Canada right now? Are you living in Canada?
Going to be.
You have to hit up the Carp Creamery ice cream.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Yeah. Oh, it's good stuff.
It's great. Yeah, yeah.
What's the flavor? Sorry, and then you can go.
Vanilla Scorio for me, gentlemen.
Pecan or butter pecan or pistachio?
I like a good. My wife calls me boring because I like butter pecan.
What's boring about that? It's got like two flavors in it. There's nothing boring about that. Vanilla is boring. Butter pecan is not boring. You need to reset the bar at home there, Molly. You got to stick up for your ice cream flavors. Jesus.
Is it bad to like have ice cream right after dinner and then miss Vicky's like while you're watching the hockey game later? Like I'm a double snacker at night.
Well, you know, you've got two love handles. You got to feed each side, you know? That's how I look at it.
There. Very sage advice.
Don't have one beer, have two beers.
Yes. All right, Biggs. I appreciate it. I hope you come back again soon. Now we know where it happened to the original Sens draft computer. You have it.
There it is.
Yeah, there you go. Yes. Thanks, guys. Cheers. Have a good
Take
day.
Take care.
See ya, Biggs.
There goes Jamie Baker, which I kept way too long. I apologize, as always.
So,
I
got to tell you. So, like, we like often refer to myself as the smartest man in hockey. Biggs. I know you've heard him call games. You've heard his analysis. He is one of the smartest, most well-spoken broadcasters in the game. He is a really smart hockey guy. And I got a chance to go when I used to do a lot of San Jose games for Sportsnet, because I'd usually get like the 10:30 late night game out on the coast, because I was on the C team. So I'd always hook up with Bakes out in San Jose when he was out there doing games. And we spent a lot of time together, so much time for Jamie Baker. And for people that have heard him talk about the game, very intelligent guy.
So I'm going to behind the scenes story is Jamie and I both sat on the board of the Ottawa Valley Titans 2 years ago.
Oh, cool.
And he was our program director. And he would break down video for the kids. One of the things he did, he was also on the ice, but he was so good at teaching them video and stupid little things like how to turn your wrist or where to put your stick and in the lanes and all. Like, I know that sounds really dumb, but when you're a kid, you don't necessarily get taught that very often. It was extremely beneficial. He's extremely intelligent of how to play the game the right way. Lots of time for him.
Yeah, I totally agree.
You can catch him, by the way, on TSN 1200 when he is doing the radio with the broadcast. Fantastic stuff. He does intermissions. Okay, Yorkie. So, by the way, congrats to our head coach, DJ Smith, along with local boys, Jack Quinn and Mackenzie Weegar, world champions. Also, Matthew Joseph's brother was also on that team as well. So congrats to him. This year was one of the first years that really I found nobody paid attention, but it's still a huge deal for those guys to go over there and become world champions.
Huge deal. And I love the Jack Quinn reference. Great, great local kid. I actually, funny story about Jack Quinn, Wally. I coached him back in, I think it was minor peewee. I had a spring hockey team. And one of the dads said to me, like, we needed a couple more kids to fill out the roster. He's like, I know this Jack Quinn kid. He plays up for the Upper Valley Aces. He doesn't play AAA because he doesn't really skate in the summer. You should put him on the team. And I'm like, yeah, sure. So Jack comes down, plays with us for the summer. We only did two or three tournaments. And he never skated in the summer. He played a bunch of different sports. And he didn't make AAA hockey until his minor midget year. Like, it's a great story. It's a great story.
Yes. It is and it isn't. He should have been playing AAA hockey.
But it just goes to show you, you don't have to.
Yes, you don't have to have the label as a AAA hockey player in order to benefit your career. I totally understand you. And in fact, I want to get him on the show. So I'm hoping once he gets back over, has a little time off, we'll have him in because he had a phenomenal year.
Great kid, great family, very humble, and actually a really good golfer too, Wally. Great golfer. Plays out at the Kanata Golf Club, golfs with my boys, but he's a great story. Great story. Yep. And I think he's going to have a very successful, thanks Tips. He had a great rookie year, I think he's not that he's going to surprise because he's on the radar right now, but he's one of those players that's just going to continue to get better and better and better as time goes on. Cause he's a natural athlete.
Was he, I thought he was part of the all rookie team or something this year, but
he sounds familiar. I'm not sure on that.
His skill set is phenomenal. Watching him do shootouts.
Yeah.
He's ridiculously good.
The program the Ottawa 67s ran when Andre Tournier was here, Andre started doing a lot of things that other teams weren't doing. And now more and more teams are doing practicing in the morning, tons of skill development, tons of video work. And they would do it all in the morning. Mm. Like junior teams practice afternoon after school. Tournier would have the kids come in the morning and get all the work done, then go to school after. So it's very tough at the beginning for the players to get used to. But once they got into it, they had a huge advantage on the rest of the league. And I thought Jack really benefited from going in there. And he's like a sponge. He just got better and better and better.
Anyway, hats off to him and to Team Canada for picking up gold. Okay, so we are back Thursday. We have a guest lined up who recently retired. So, man played for the Ottawa Senators for over 10 years. Okay.
Good human being.
That's all I'm saying in case he doesn't show up.
He'll show. I might be golfing, though. I might be golfing. You and Bobby.
No. If you're not here, it'll be Bobby, I, and special guest Star.
Yes, Star. I would categorize him as a star.
Yorkie, go enjoy. We'll chat soon. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We appreciate it. Watching Coming in Hot, presented by Betano. Go to betano.ca.
Coming in Hot is brought to you by betano.ca. Please hit that like button and subscribe to our channel to never miss an episode.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.